Welcome to IKP's Digital Film Podcast, where we literally discuss everything and anything in the digital film world, and even some analog stuff. I mean, we may cover Betamax all the way to 4K, Hi8 tapes, VHS tapes, the history of DVD, HD DVD, Blu-ray format war, TVs, CRTs, floppy disks, 8-track tapes. Who knows? I'm fucking jumping all over the place here. But yeah, that's what you'll get here at the IKP's Digital Film Podcast. You might learn something, you might not, you might laugh till you shit your pants, who knows? But for the next 45 minutes to an hour, we'll try and give you at least some digital film entertainment. So kick back, relax, and enjoy our sexy digital film podcast. Yeah. All right, guys, welcome to another episode of IKP's Digital Film Podcast, where, once again, we literally discuss everything and anything in the digital film world. Digital meaning kind of, you know, it's a broad spectrum, you know, an umbrella term, if you will, to cover game consoles, audio devices, tablets, computers, digital cameras. Digital processing in film could mean that's what I get for not taking my meds. Yeah, well, you know, I could, you know, someone asked me the other day, well, you know, what's why do you call it digital film, you know? And I said, well, you know, that's what they kind of call, you know, anything that's captured digitally and put up on the big screen, you know, because it's not captured on emulsion or you know, film. It's caught on some form of digital media. And, you know, it's called digital film by some people. The phrase hasn't been coined or copywritten, but as far as I know. So I kind of just, you know, said, you know, that just sounds right. You know, Impulse Kitty Productions Digital Film Podcast, you know, that can mean anything. That can mean, like, anything from, you know, digital capture to digital presentation to an Xbox 360 game. You know, that's digital. You know, that has something to do with digital. Film can mean, you know, an actual film or something shot on film or, you know, what have you. So it's, I don't know. It's just the fucking name of the podcast. So most of the time that I name stuff, it usually has more or less to do more with how we perceive and look at the world, as opposed to, you know, let's think up the coolest fucking name, you know. Like IKP is just, you know, two of our nicknames that Impulse used to be my handle back in 2006, when an episode of Smallville got me interested in the one of the characters, DC characters, one of my favorites is the Flash. But before he became the Flash, there was one character in particular called Bart Allen, and he was nicknamed Impulse, not for being cool or anything, but Batman nicknamed because he was just, you know, he would always run without thinking, do things without thinking. And, you know, to a sense, it kind of described the younger me. And that's why I use the handle on different things, on video games, or I would use it as a nickname per se. You know, nobody would go around calling me Impulse or anything like that. And then, you know, Kitty was my wife's nickname. I just started calling her Kitty. You know, those nicknames, you just fucking, you don't know where they come from. And I think it did come from the 70s show, because the character's mom was named Kitty, and I think we were into that at the time. It was so long ago. But, you know, I call her Kitty or by her middle name. You know, it's but most of the time I call her Sherry. But anyway, so those are the two nicknames, and we were like, well, you know, the Impulse Kitty, you know, that means something to us, and, you know, nobody probably has that. You know, the Impulse name ended up being the name of one of our cats, migrated to the cats, and Sherry loves cats, so her nickname kind of fit her good. We rarely use these nicknames anymore, so we just kind of said, you know, we're not a studio, we're kind of a little small production house of sorts. So let's just call ourselves Impulse Kitty Productions. So name essentially came from two nicknames, and the thing became so long that I was like, well, how can we shorten this and make it more marketable or, you know, more aesthetically pleasing or easier to kind of say instead of like, the, you know, Impulse Kitty Productions is kind of a big mouthful. So I just, you know, let's just fucking do the acronym, the IKP, but instead of putting the dots, let's do it like, you know, VHS, you know, some. So that's why we have the slashes there in IKP. Anyway, that was a small insight into the company's name and where it might migrate from here to there. Who knows? I don't know. But once again, the full fact that I, you know, we don't pick names, which is, it's so hard to come up with a good name and not only a good logo or name, but something that means something to you. But we're kind of, you know, getting off track here. So on to summer blockbusters, which this podcast is about. And I'm obviously, as you well know, I'm flying solo here. So what do we got here? We got a good lineup here. You know, Iron Man 3 is coming out in 3 days. Some people overseas have already seen it. It's been met with good reviews. I myself, by some means or another, have more or less kind of seen the picture, more or less. Let's just kind of leave it at that. And my, you know, initial spoiler-free review is that of, you know, it's fucking Iron Man taken to the next level in terms of, like, you know, the second one was kind of weak sauce. You know, it almost felt like they tried to slap the fucking same shit on the second one that they did the first one, and it just didn't work. So, you know, it was kind of, it fell flat for me. I mean, I still watch it. I mean, it's still, you know, kind of a good film, but, you know, where it fits in this whole Marvel Phase 1 universe that they were creating, it didn't quite fit. You know, there wasn't anything that really, except for maybe a couple new Mark suits and the introduction of the triangle piece, arc reactor that goes into his chest. So, which eventually in Avengers, it goes back to being a circle. And in this third iteration, there's, you know, a huge threat. I mean, it's fun to watch, and I gotta say, out of all three, I think that the first one and the third one are the funnest to watch. The second one is okay, definitely Avengers, but, you know, I asked myself the same question, like, fucking, like, I'm sure everybody did, how the fuck are they gonna beat Avengers? Where the fuck you go from here? And, you know, I've seen these trailers, Thor, Iron Man 3, etc., etc. You know, and Marvel's, Disney's Marvels, or Marvel's Disney, whatever you want to call it, has come up with a very, very interesting way of not only handling this franchise, but getting the best directors, the best actors, and some of the best producers to participate in these genre of films. And with Iron Man 3, by no means is it a letdown, but it does answer that question that maybe some people had. It's like, how do these people go back to their own universes and you keep that kind of Avengers world where, you know, we know all these heroes exist in this world, but we don't have to call upon them or even mention them to keep them relevant, in a sense. You know, they'll come together organically when it's time for them to come together. And from what I can tell in Iron Man 3, it's been pulled off so far very successfully, where, you know, you do sort of reference certain things that have happened in New York, the events of our Avengers, but you don't kind of dwell on it. You don't, you know, you don't hit the fucking nail with the hammer too many times, because and it goes on to be Tony's story. And And you kind of forget for a little bit, like fucking this whole Avengers shit happened, and you're fucking enthralled into what's going on. What the fuck is Iron Man doing? Like, this is fucking awesome, and fuck, you know? And then you come out of it, you're like, I'm fucking psyched. I didn't think I could be fucking psyched, but I'm fucking psyched for the next one. I want to see where it goes from here, and so on and so on. So that's essentially what I felt when I watched what I was able to watch. And definitely, you know, going to see it on the big screen, because, you know, a movie like that, you have to kind of make it a communal, you know, celebration. Because, you know, waiting for it to come out on Blu-ray, which I'm a big supporter of, because, you know, there's a lot of reasons I don't go to the movie theaters, you know, many of which probably are the same why certain individuals don't go to the movie theater anymore, because there's so many annoyances that come with going to the movie theater nowadays, whether it's the talking teenagers or the talking adults or the shitty floor or the projector not being quite calibrated right. Now that fucking pisses me off. You know, I'm paying good money to see a movie I've been waiting for, and the entire time the fucking movie's out of focus, or the sound, the fucking DTS or Dolby Digital or whatever fucking sound they got isn't fucking turned on. So, you know, you set up your own home theater at home, you know, you spend a lot of money, and, you know, now with 4K coming down the pike, and you know, Blu-ray kind of becoming this very tangible and very affordable thing, along with Blu-ray players and HD TVs and whatnot, and home theater systems, there's, you know, sometimes no reason to go to the movie theater anymore to me, in a sense. Sometimes, you know, there are movies that I can kind of be like, ah, you know, I'll wait till Blu-ray. And then there's times where I used to do the midnight showing of these movies, which was very exciting, very fun, to be there. We did it with all the Harry Potters, for example, all the prequels to Star Wars, which was a fucking huge mistake. Don't get me started on that shit. But for example, take the Harry Potters, fan or not, or who whatever you are. I mean, those events did require a communal audience. You know, you had to share this with the people that, you know, shared the same pattern. And there's, you know, that's why people go to Comic-Con, that's why people go to MegaCon and all these conventions, because they all share this love and adoration of these mythical characters. Not even mythical, fucking, if just fucking bullshit characters. And you can go to a place or screening or something where you all like the same fucking shit and not be judged by the outside public, which just does some people don't understand, which is, you know, essentially, you know, now, you know, geeks, nerds, whatever you want to call us, we're the minority, and now we're becoming the fucking, you know, the latter half of the situation now. Now fucking you guys are the minority. We're fucking taking over. I mean, you got it. I mean, the anyway, so Iron Man 3, I just finished sucking its dick, so now we'll move on. So the next movie on my radar. Okay, there's a couple movies on my radar for this summer. One of them is The Great Gatsby, which comes out the week after. But and by no means is it a superhero movie or anything like that. And if, you know, if you've seen the Robert Redford movie, you know, you kind of know about it, or you've read the novel. So every person, and this is where my interest comes into The Great Gatsby, from, I'm pretty sure I'm gonna butcher his name, is Baz Luhrmann, or I'm just gonna Baz, fucking director of Romeo and Juliet, Moulin Rouge, many other movies produced and whatnot. A great visual style director, great, very, very visual, good storyteller. When I first saw Romeo and Juliet back in the day, it was something that I had never seen before, and a lot of people were criticizing it. Why the fuck is it in modern day world? And it throws me off that they're in modern day clothes and their swords or their guns, and but they're still talking in Shakespearean. I fucking think it was genius, and right so, because, you know, he took something old fashioned and flipped it and made it essentially accessible to modern audiences. You know, teenagers at the time, had you had released a Romeo and Juliet set in the Shakespearean time and with Shakespearean clothes, it might have not reached the audience that it did and that it did connect with. And it opened a kind of a floodgate to, at least for me as a teenager and several teenagers that I knew when I was a teenager. And that movie came out, man. I was all about fucking Shakespeare and like, show me some more shit. I even fucking saw the old. I mean, I had seen the old one. You know, you watch it at school or whatever for fucking language arts or whatever you reading class, whatever classes you guys have nowadays. But you know, it was the fact that someone took their time and made it relevant to us. You know, it's like they didn't dumb down the language of the original script, but they adapted it in today's time. And it's like, look, you know, even though we got this Shakespearean fucking crap going on, I guarantee you the audiences can get it, because I always say actions speak louder than words. There's many times I've seen foreign films and whatnot that I didn't understand the fucking language, but you know, I understood kind of what was going on and the emotions being, you know. And if you have a good, you know, actor and actress and director and cinematographer, not, you know, you have a core group of filmmakers that are really good. You know, the message is going to get across, whether you're speaking in Shakespearean tongue or fucking Japanese or whatever the fuck you want to speak in. But the point is that once again, this director has taken something, period, and has somehow migrated with a modern flair, be it the cinematography, the ultra hyper, colors and the lack of a period look, yet the costumes are very period, but they're almost hyper real, as I would call them. They're the colors are really bright, they're graded richly. It's a very colorful, beautiful, artsy. It's just fucking fun to look at. Like, have you seen any of the trailers of the Great Gatsby with DiCaprio and fuck, I can't remember, Tobey Maguire and so on and so forth. It's mixed in with a lot of modern music, but music that's kind of like, because a lot of the music in it is they've taken or they've done covers of other songs that were kind of jazzy and whatnot. So, you know, in the 20s jazz period and whatnot. So once again, showing audiences something new is like, hey, you know, here's something fucking old, but we don't have to make it that old. We can make it old, contemporary, and kind of mix it well enough to the point where we just don't hit one audience. It's like, this is a movie that, okay, fuck, my dad loves The Great Gatsby, or my mom loved The Great Gatsby novel, or the Great Gatsby film with Robert Redford, and this is something that's like, fuck, I want to take my fucking kid to go see this, or my grandparents to go see this, and they'll get it just as much as the teenager will get it. At least that's my expectation of it. You know, you throw a well-known name as DiCaprio in there as the lead and whatnot. You know, so once again, great shit going on out there. I think Baz, a very visual, pretty genius director in my effect. If I didn't suck that movie's dick enough, there it was. You know, that's kind of my in and out dry side of what I thought about, or what I think, or what my expectations are about The Great Gatsby 2013 version. And moving on to the one film that I believe I am not alone in wanting to see this. I think when I talk about this film, it's got its bad rep, you know, and it's got this kind of more or less curse that's kind of followed it, because nobody's more or less been able to successfully pull this movie off, whether it be a TV show of it, many fan-made movies of it, really studio attempts not that long ago to do it. And the 1970 version of it, which was successful, but yet still wasn't what I see when I close my eyes and I see Superman. So the Man of Steel is the movie we're talking about. And it awesomely landed into the laps of producer Christopher Nolan and director Zack Snyder. Now, Christopher Nolan, fucking all you gotta do is say The Dark Knight or Batman Begins or Memento, and the fucking name is known. For the great success of the trilogy of Batman movies that were beautifully executed, although the last one was, you can fucking drive plot holes, Dutch trucks through the fucking plot holes and shit. But that's neither here nor there. It was fucking great cinematography, and so on and so forth. But a great man nonetheless. He's behind Inception, fucking Memento, which was fucking mind-bending, and fucking Christopher Nolan. And then you got a visual director that fucking blows my mind every fucking time. The idea that Sucker Punch was a failure and was a kick in the ass, and a lot of people didn't like it, which kind of was kind of weird to me, because Sucker Punch to me was not only an original piece of work, but it was also kind of like Expendables, but with chicks. It was self-aware that it was. More or less, this is what we're getting. We're getting a bunch of fucking chicks together, and we're gonna make this movie based on this, it's all in her mind. It's about the mind, and what's happening here is mirrored in the alternate, as it were. And I think it worked. I think the visuals were outstanding. I think the story was straightforward. I didn't have to think too much. But sometimes with movies, like Expendables or shit, things that go boom, I think that from time to time you need something like that. But I think that Zack Snyder is a great storyteller, and he proved himself with 300 and Watchmen. Watchmen is exceptionally great. If you don't think that Zack Snyder knows how to storytell, if you're worried that Superman is not going to be handled right, I mean, go take a look at Watchmen. Even if you're not a big Watchmen fan, take a look, read the graphic novel. Take some time out to kind of, do a little research on the Watchmen. The fucking guy did it justice. I mean, it was like almost frame for frame. A lot of the novels, the color palette, which heavily relied on the secondary colors as opposed to the primaries, which are red, green, and blue. So, a great movie, and everybody knows 300 and whatnot. So, and what a great success that was, and fucking whatnot. So you have this guy now. And he's got his fucking hands all over Superman's fucking giant cock. And, skepticism. Like, fuck, dude, we just had Superman Returns, which is a fucking pile of fucking steaming soft serve, some people say. I say the Superman Returns, I think the problem with Superman Returns wasn't so much the visual effects or I think it was just that the Bryan Singer was so involved in making a love letter to the Richard Donner films that it wasn't able to be its own unique piece of art. Like kind of like Zack Snyder and everybody, there are people that hold on to Superman. Even theme, the fucking dun, 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 that fucking theme. But the idea that these people outright said, look, we're gonna fucking treat the Superman movie like there had never been a Superman movie ever made or a Superman score ever made. And some people could say, how could you ignore the history that is Christopher Reeves or the fucking anthem, the fucking, John Williams and shit. I believe it was John Williams. I can't remember. It's so fucking long ago. I've seen that movie so many fucking times, and it's just, and I think it's genius. I think it's like that's how you treat Superman. Especially because the new reboot of the DC universe in the comic book realm with the new 52s universe and everything like that. So you have an opportunity to takes some of the new story arcs and lines and borrow from different, you know, palettes of the universe, which there are many, and you kind of twist it and kind of mold it to fit this visual exuberance. Like, how can we tell this story without fucking it up? And that's a huge responsibility. Now, from what I've seen, it's been every trailer I've seen has not been what I expected, which is a good thing. Because, you know, the second you start seeing things that look semi-familiar to the Reeves or Returns, you know, you tend to get a little worried, you know? And down to the fucking costume, down to the music for the latest trailer, down to the actor, Henry Cavill just fucking looks like he was ripped out of the fucking Superman comic books. I mean, it doesn't even look like a fucking actor. It just looks like fucking Superman, you know? I was a big supporter of Smallville. I really thought that they were kind of gonna migrate that, you know, because it had a really good following. And once again, a good base plate where they said, okay, you know, we're going to kind of ignore the story arc of Superman and kind of reboot it in a sense in this TV show and show Clark meeting certain key characters of the DC universe in different out of sort times and whatnot. And we're essentially going to treat it like it's our own thing. And once again, it had its success. It ran for 10 seasons, which is great for a TV show, great success for a TV show. And it's a little bit on a high note and a down note because you kind of, you know, you just kind of really wanted to see it fleshed out. But it never got to that point. And I think that that from what I see and from what I'm hearing out of the Man of Steel camp is that they're taking this. You know, they took a lot of cues. When I watch the trailer, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Smallville mixed in with Thor and some other shit. But what I like about it is that they seem to be not only rebooting it, but a lot of people were like, "Wow, I don't want to fucking see another origin story. I know the fucking boom, you know, planet goes boom and blah 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 this." But from what it seems like to me, there it seems more or less like, okay, well, if we're gonna spend time on a reboot and telling the whole story again, let's find ways to tell this story either in flashback mode or in a series of you know, in a sense, to me, it's good that they're kind of doing another origin story. But it seems like to me, like, you know, the exclusion of Kryptonite and other things is great to me because, you know, what would be great would be, okay, well, let's make this movie a Superman movie, not like, okay, well, you know, you have to develop the alter ego and then you got to do a no. The fucking entire time, this guy's fucking Superman. Like, let's focus on that. Like, from, you know, he arrives, he knows at a young age who he is, what he's, you know, he's an alien, he's got powers, and he's trying to keep it under, you know, under wraps and whatnot. And then he goes on this fucking journey, and then he fucking, you know, saves people from time to time, and nobody really knows who's going around doing these good deeds and finds out about himself. Fucking, yeah, I'm fucking Kal-El. I got a big ass, and fucking, this is my fucking underwear. I wear it outside because, you know, I don't have any armor and blah, 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 this and whatnot. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, Google the shit. Anyway, and then spend time just like, okay, well, now I saved Earth. I fucking, whatever it is, I revealed myself to the world or however they're going to treat it. Now, how do I make a life that's separate from that and then introduce the character of Clark Kent and be that like the secondary thing? Which is, I don't know if any of that shit made sense, but it made sense to me and I'm kind of entertaining myself. So hopefully it made sense to you. But anyway, so I'm kind of really jazzed to see, you know, when the first teaser trailer came out, there was no indication of Superman. You know, it was a guy in a boat, fishing boat with the fucking Grizzly Adam beard and shit. And people are like, what the fuck is this? Same fucking Superman, you know, and then you see him fucking break the fucking sound barrier towards the end, big fucking ass, you know, and then the second trailer came out, you knew it was Superman, and then the third trailer came out, fucking Dude, it looks like he's fucking not just saving people. Like, you know, he looks like he's fucking actually kicking ass, and the suit looks amazing, and the fucking cinematography looks great. The color correction, the grittiness of grain, being that I think it was shot on film, you know, because I don't know, Zack Snyder, he fucking known for huge grain and a certain type of color palette, and obviously the super slow motion that he does, which I hope he doesn't overuse in this movie. But anyway. I mean, I think a young guy like Zack Snyder, a very visual guy, mixed with the production sense and know-how of established director like Nolan. You know, those two, I mean, how could you miss? But that's the movie I got my eyes on because it's one that deserves its day in the sun, like, you know. And I hope it kind of comes out like, you know, when Iron Man came out, it was kind of like an underdog. You know, people were like, this isn't gonna fucking work, and fucking blew up. And, you know, right now, I think a lot of people are also, there's a lot of skeptics out there like, oh, he has no fucking red underwear. He has, the suit looks a little weird. And I don't know about this kind of, you know, it's like, you know, anything different is good. So I kind of leave it at that. I might have to fucking eat my words later, but I'm the one rooting for this. I'm glad that it looks like Superman, yet it looks like its own fucking unique thing. Definitely he's got Zack Snyder's fucking hand print all over, fucking cock mark, if you will, all over this fucking movie. So that one. And then you know, a lot of people aren't fans of this type of genre, but I'm all over the fucking place. I can fucking watch, you know, something like The Great Gatsby and then move on to Man of Steel and then go back to something like fucking Grindhouse or fucking, you know, Once Upon a Time in Mexico, or I can watch a fucking Charlie Chaplin flick or whatnot. So you can never pin me down. So, like, you know, I like different kind of genres and for different reasons, which, you know, if I went into it, fucking be like 2 hour podcast. But Fast and Furious 6. Now you're asking already, like, oh, fucking this 6 movies. You know, it's kind of funny because a lot of people say that their least favorite of the Fast and Furious franchise was Tokyo Drift, which to me, Tokyo Drift was the linchpin of what came out of these. The camp of Tokyo Drift released not only one of the most beloved characters, which is Han, but brought in Justin Lee, the director that has helmed the series since Tokyo Drift on. It kind of is making this kind of circular storylines kind of interweave and connect and make sense more or less, you know. And not only has been able to take the ceiling off into where it's like, you know, when you used to look at Fast and Furious movies, like the first two, it's like, oh, it's hot chicks and fucking fast cars. It was all about the fucking cars and the chicks. Well, now it's more like a fucking, you know, Italian job fucking kind of heists movie where it is about the cars and less now about the flash of the cars. The cars are more utilitarian, and the girls have been minimized to badass fucking, you know, strong leading characters, and the story no longer has to do with street racing per se. It has to kind of do with heists or stopping bad guys, or, you know, the fucking kind of French Connection kind of shit, if you're aware of any of that kind of genre. So I commend Justin Lee to be able to have taken a franchise that had a cap on it and take the cap off and make it for a broader audience. So you naysayers, take a look at Tokyo Drift, and I would say from there on, just try and kind of take a look at it. If you were gonna kind of jump in at any point, it would probably have to be, I like to say Tokyo Drift or the first one, because the first one sets the characters into motion, and you kind of, so okay, so watch the first one. If you're gonna watch any of them, you know, stay away from the second one. Second one kind of sucks. Watch the first one in Tokyo Drift, and then kind of make your mind up of where you want to go from there. If those two don't kind of catch you and you can't see that spark, especially in Tokyo Drift, then you're not gonna get anything else out of it. Fast Five is really good, and it does go into that kind of genre where it's like it's also self-aware, like the Expendables, where it's like, okay, we know we're doing semi-extraordinary things with cars that most normal people can't do and won't do and whatnot. But what I commend about Justin Lee is that he's also one of those directors that's like, let's try and do as much as we can in camera and use as little compositing as possible, or CGI or whatever. So anyway, so Fast and Furious 6 is another one on my list. And Thor, what is it? Fucking, I got. Well, let's before we go on to Thor, because it's not till November, and one of the things I hate is getting a trailer for a movie. I love and hate it. It's like a love hate thing. You get a trailer for a movie that doesn't come out till the fall, such as Thor, and it comes out in November of this year, but we get a teaser trailer this year, so it gets you all fucking psyched up, and then you gotta wait like 6 months for the fucking thing. So. So it's like this love hate, like, yeah, we got this Thor movie, but fuck, we gotta wait, So let's go Star Trek Into Darkness. J.J. Abrams, amazing director. I mean, if you were into Lost or Super 8 or the original reboot of the first Star Trek, then from what I see, there's a lot of marketing behind Star Trek Into Darkness, which is kind of weird in a way because the first one was like kept under wraps from what I remember a lot. You really kind of had to go out there and find content and whatnot. But in the second one, it almost looked like they were going to keep it under wraps. But surprisingly and pleasantly surprised that they're fucking laying their balls right all over the fucking table and saying, look, here's a fucking clip here, here's a fucking clip there, here's a fucking clip here. And sure, there's a lot of spoiler material out there, but essentially it looks to me like another successful Star Trek movie. A lot of Star Trek fans don't like it, don't want anything to do with it. You rape my fucking universe. And then other people are like, yeah, this is fucking badass, and da 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 this, and this is for my generation. The idea that I go in with watching these movies is not whether, you can only, as a director myself, I think that you can only pay homage to something that you're putting your stamp on so much, because if you go too far, for example, what we were talking about, Superman Returns was a nod too much to the Richard Donner film, the original Superman, the Superman the movie with Christopher Reeve. It was such an they tried to squeeze a lot of that information into this one, and it kind of just became this really fucked up mess in a way. So, I think J.J. Abrams has done a great job into not only, okay, well, how are we going to reintroduce this material, but and how are we going to make it, relevant and make it broader for a broader audience. So, you create another timeline, which is completely, believable, but at the same time, you're like, okay, let's make this first one. Let's introduce a lot of new shit. But let's do these little nods to the hardcore fans, which is great. But let's look to the future on what this is going to be, because it can't be the same thing. You can't have fucking Leonard Nimoy and fucking. I'm blanking out here with the lack of sleep I've gotten, or too much sleep, however you want to look at it. The original James Kirk, fucking, I can't remember his name right now for some fucking reason. I'm a fucking anyway, but you can't have those characters like replay these characters. You can. You can't have. I don't know. It's hard to justify it from a non-Trekkie point of view, I guess you can say. You can only use the information so much. I mean, I think they integrated, from what I've seen from the BTS, from the behind the scenes of the original, of the Star Trek, the first one, the remake. It looks like J.J. Abrams, you know, took on writers and producers that somewhat knew about the genre, but made sure that there was enough influence into the movie from, you know, the past stuff and, you know, the catalog of information that's available in the Star Trek universe. Yeah, he missed a couple things, certain things. For example, like my cousin nitpicked because, you know, they fucking treat it like religion, and that's cool, you know. But I think that J.J. Abrams has done a great job into you know, making it broader for a broader audience, as opposed to just like, okay, these core group of people, we're gonna market to these core group of people and nobody else, you know, because the movie wouldn't make any fucking money. So, you know, and at the end of the day, what's movies? Essentially, the movies are pieces of art. Some make sense, some don't make sense. I've said before, art doesn't have to fucking make sense. But essentially, I think art, at the end of the day, whether you like it or not, has to generate some sort of revenue. So, because you're in the business of fucking making movies. And as much as you want to fucking make movies and have your art out there for free and your storytelling and shit, you know, at the same time, you fucking want to make money. So the end game is, how can we make this profitable, yet how do I not compromise my sensibilities and you know, and all this bullshit that comes with being a director or whatnot. Especially if you're working with a studio that's got your fucking balls in a vice, or your vagina, your tits in a vice, or whatever, and are asking you, well, you got to cut this, and then you got to go through the MPAA, then, you know, if it's rated R, then you don't make as much money, because not a lot of people can see rated R movies. You use that core demographic, PG-13s make more money, because, you know, a lot more people can see them, so on and so forth. So there's a lot of politics and bullshit, but at the end, you know, the end game is about making money. So you can't cater to the core group of fans. You can only cater so much before it becomes this cult thing, which a lot of people like and don't like their thing, like, well, this was fucking cool, and now it's like everybody fucking thinks it's cool. But don't you kind of want that? I mean, you know, because I remember there was like a certain movies like Hackers or Memento, which were movies, actually, you know, further back there was this movie, Four Rooms. And, you know, each chapter of the movie had a different director behind it. It was the indie directors. It was like fucking Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino and other directors. I forget. But it was a very obscure movie that came out. Very indie movie that came out. And it's a great movie. Check it out. Four Rooms. It's with Tim. The fucking guy from The Hulk. He was in Pulp Fiction, he was in the opening credits with this chick, and they hold up the diner. Tim Roth, and I think it is. I'm so bad right now today, sorry, forgive me. Maybe it's my fucking meds, lack of meds. Sleep, maybe lack of sleep, or too much sleep. Too much water, too much fiber in my diet, I don't fucking know. Maybe I got hit in the head by a huge dildo. Which none of it has to do with anything I have to say. Yeah, these obscure movies that, you know, kind of like, you know, you pass under the table. You're like, fucking watch this. You're going to fucking laugh your ass off. You know, yeah, you know, Prayer of the World of Boys, you know, which starred Corey Haim. You know, it's like, I fucking watch this. It's fucking amazing. It's fucking amazing. And then you sit, why doesn't anybody get this shit? I fucking love this. Nobody gets it. You don't get me. I'm fucking complicated. And only a few people get this shit. But in the back of your mind, you're kind of like, I fucking wish people fucking knew and get off my fucking ass about, you know, watching this movie over and over. And why it means so much. I wish everybody understood. I wish everybody would love this movie. And then everybody would get it. Then I wouldn't have to justify why I watched it so many times. Why I fucking treat it like religion. So essentially,
you want your movies to have this range. And it's kind of funny that it has a kind of like a negative reaction to when a movie genre like, Star Trek becomes for a more broader audience, or something like Fast and Furious or whatnot. You're no longer sitting in your cave going, "I wish everybody would like this." You're now, or "This is mine." Now everybody fucking likes it. See, you have like a love-hate relationship with the situation, because at first you get to say like, "Well, I liked this before it was cool," but nobody can really say that. Be like, "Well, I fucking liked this before it was cool," and then they throw out, So it's, I don't know. I'm kind of babbling at this point, but you guys kind of get the point I'm getting at. The end game is broader audiences and money, whether it be on YouTube or whatnot. You can only give so much away for free in this business, before you have to start generating some sort of revenue, I guess is my point. It has nothing to do with the excitement of these movies, but kind of got financially political there for a second. But tutorials and camera reviews can only be done for free for so many times until you have to look back and be like, "Fuck, this is time out of my schedule." Knowledge should be for free, but if all knowledge was for free, then nobody would be able to generate revenue, pay their house bills, feed their children, so on and so forth. So, and that's a whole another fucking monster that you have to deal with. But so the last movie on my list, I think it's on my radar for actually going to the movies and seeing it, is probably Thor: The Dark World, and which introduces Natalie Portman again, and you got Chris Hemsworth as Thor, which I'm fucking kind of really glad that they didn't slap a fucking bleach blonde beard on his ass again, which looked really distracting in the first one. I think that was my only gripe with the first one. It was like, he fucking looks weird with this fucking bleach blonde beard. And then when Avengers came out, he fucking kind of had like this 5 o'clock shadow, more or less. And it was more of a natural color, so they kind of kept that. And elevated this director, did Game of Thrones, and they have, fucking Loki in it with his, I don't know if he's gonna have a Loki pokey stick or whatever, but I don't know. The fucking trailer looks epic. All trailers kind of tend to look the same nowadays, and essentially, from what I'm told and from what I understand from Steven Soderbergh, is that it's based on marketing and tests. They actually test these trailers on different markets, and that's why essentially everyone goes, they have that build. Everything has to go boom, boom, and all trailers look the fucking same. But their trailers are to get you hyped, and that's what gets you hyped. Big booms and the promise of a lot of action with little to no narrative. How dumbed down has this society have gotten? I don't know. I'm part of it, so who knows? I get sucked into it. But my stroke of influence can be anything. Like, you ask me, "Okay, well, what's your fucking favorite director?" And you would think it'd be something like Steven Spielberg or some, trendy shit like that. But tell you the truth, David Fincher. I'm a great, I mean, there's not too many people that I would gush over, like, if I met. But I think that if I met David Fincher, I would have a lot to ask and to say. So that's my favorite director. Steven Spielberg, he's okay. He's just not my type of, I like Jurassic Park, but had the 3D conversion not been as good, I probably wouldn't have been a fan of, I probably wouldn't have picked it up. Because, Jurassic Park, I've seen a million times. And I was like, "All right, well, it came out in 3D. I'm a big supporter of 3D. I like 3D. I like shit jumping out at me. I like gimmicks and whatnot. And I also like 3D that's, more or less kind of subtle. I hate 3D that's just fucking there for no reason. Fucking just marketing crap." But, they did a great job with the conversion of Jurassic Park 3D. So pick it up if you have a Blu-ray player that supports 3D capability, and your television does too. And enjoy you some Jurassic Park 3D. They did a great job keeping the DTS 7.1 lossless audio track. It's awesome. Awesome. Got great reviews on Blu-ray.com. And it looks a little soft. They removed a lot of grain on the transfer for the 3D one, so it does look a little weird because it kind of looks new. And then you watch the non-3D version, and it's got its grit and its fucking grain and whatnot. But the 3D conversion, aside from all those other little things, are fucking amazing. Especially the DTS track. In fact, that was one of the first movies that incorporated a DTS soundtrack back in the day. George Lucas, sorry, Steven Spielberg was like, man, I want these theaters to they have to have a DTS system to watch this. I don't know. So he was a big supporter in DTS. He was one of the founding people of DTS. So anyway, so that's it. I think it's my excitement for these movies this summer. Summer blockbusters, if you will. Why are they called blockbusters? Because people would fucking line up around the fucking block just to watch this fucking movie. Who doesn't know that? Anyway, but yeah, definitely, those are on my kind of radar right now. And definitely I will make podcasts, whether it be me, Sherry, both of us, if time permitting, weather permitting, etc. We can be in the same room at the same time. Yeah, we'll discuss each movie in a semi-comprehensive review. Very spoiler, because how could you not talk about the fucking movie without talking about the fucking movie? That's why I always fucking hate when it's like, oh, spoiler alert. Or it's like, I'm gonna review the fucking movie. I'm gonna review the fucking, I'm gonna talk about the fucking movie. So just know that IKP here, full of spoilers. Always have been, always will be. We're not gonna hold anything back. We know something, we're just gonna fucking talk about it. Especially if it excites us. We'll obviously let right when we're about to jump into spoilers, but for most of the part, kind of have that in the back of your heads if you're following us. We're all about spoilers and whatnot. Yet so secretive about our projects. Go figure. All right, well, thanks for stopping by, and I guess I'll talk to you guys next time. Thanks for supporting us. Go to impulsekitty.com if you want to follow us, find out information. Impulsekitty.com, one word, no capitals, just impulsekitty.com. www.impulsekitty.com. You go there, and there's pages, color grading tests that I've done, links to our Facebook, Vimeo, pretty much our podcast, pretty much a one-stop shop where you need to go, or where you want to follow us, Facebook, whatever. You want to take a look at a couple pictures we've done and what we're up to, what short film we might be doing, what music video trivia we might be doing, what's the new color correction that we've been doing, what camera are we talking about, what are we jonesing for right now? Jonesing for fucking the new Blackmagic production camera, 4K for 4K. Amazing stuff going on over there at Blackmagic. Amazing stuff. Stirring the pot, those motherfuckers are. But that's for another subject. So anyway, www.impulsekitty.com. Support us, like us, build our audience. Everything's for free right now. We are a nonprofit organization. And once again, like I said before, the end game is to eventually make money, but right now it is all for the taking. So take, I will give, and you will take. So thanks for stopping by.